Everybody here? Everybody ready?
Good.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. It's Overton Power District Number 5 Board Meeting in the Overton Office, November 20th, 2024, at 3:00 p.m. Are there any public comments? Hearing no public comments, we'll go on to acceptance of the agenda for possible action. Do I hear a motion?
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we accept the agenda as posted. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Item D, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting held October 16th, 2024. Do I hear a motion?
I move we accept the minutes.
Second.
October.
It's been moved and seconded that we have, we accept the meeting, the previous meeting minutes from October 16th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? I have nothing to report today. Yet. I guess I do want to ask, has everybody had a chance to read your whole agenda and everything?
Yeah.
No, don't say it. Okay. Attorney's report.
I have nothing at this time unless anyone has a question for me. Yet.
Okay, manager's report.
Okay, Scott, we'll start with you first.
I also have nothing at this time. All right, let's get the cybersecurity report in there for November. And it works. Okay, cybersecurity training for the month of October. We're 100% attendance for that meeting or for that training. We've got a really good cybersecurity training program going on. We're learning all kinds of really good things. Some of the topics this month were social engineering, insider threats, continuous monitoring, and effective teamwork. And the reason we do that is right here. We had somebody click in the month of October on one of our phishing campaigns. I will say that this was not a seasoned employee. This was a new employee. So that new employee has been talked to, and the training continues.
Wasn't Mendes this time.
Was not Mendes. It will fall for that. This employee has less than a year with OPD, so it's hard to fault him, but we still do. And the reason we do that is because we had 3,000 spam email in the month of October, 39,000 total email. Firewall blocks by country for you to look at here. Bulgaria with them coming in number one. And I will just remind the board that every other country is blocked on the firewall. So there's, I'm not going to say there's no way for an intrusion to happen, but they are firewall blocked by country. And so when you see this, those are already blocked, but we are seeing those pings on the firewall interface. Server system uptime, 100% for the month of October. I really don't want to report anything other than that. It would be a bad day, a bad month. Database backup and restoration for the record. We have 100% data backup and restoration has been tested. The EISACs, we received 68 emails. This is what it looks like when we review those emails. Gunshot damage, brute force attempts. So we look into those a little bit, and then we run this through AI, say what were the threat patterns? And you might say, why do you do that? Why do you know what the threat patterns are? But we use this when we have our IT meetings every month. We use this when we have our security committee meetings. So we have to know what's going on out there. Cyber threats was the number one thing when you took those 68 emails. The targeted critical infrastructure, brute force attempts, phishing campaigns. The second threat pattern was physical security threats. There was damage to critical infrastructure in those emails. People reported intrusions to the control rooms and substations. And finally, the last thing was insider threats. And those emails emphasized the importance of employee awareness. And then it's funny down here at the bottom, and I don't know if it's because of the season, we're in a political season. AI picked up that there are indications of increased geopolitical tensions and potential state-sponsored cyber attacks targeting critical infrastructure. Now that I went through those 68 emails, I didn't pick that up, but AI was able to pick that up. So that concludes my report. If there's any questions about cybersecurity? Nope.
Great job.
Thank you, Scott. Let's go to Randall next.
Go to that first one, Merlin. The next one.
Is there a keyboard?
Okay, we have the bid results for the 138 line from Tortoise to Gila. It's kind of hard to read. We had a faulty pen in penmanship on this one. The low bidder was Hunt at about $5.5 million, and then Cache Valley was second at about $6.2 million. And so we had some really good low bids on this project. We anticipate being under budget by about $500 to $1 million on the overall project. We'll know more later on next year. But the actual bid was about $400,000 higher than what we had budgeted. But because of some of the extra foundations that were added into this job, they went over that amount. But a lot of the other materials are coming back under budget. So overall, on the project, we should be about $500 to $1 million under budget next year.
Is there anywhere that shows the total?
The total, yeah, the 5.5 is the total. The far right column is the bond adder. The total items 1 through 4.
Okay, I see now. All right.
Have we worked with Hunt before?
Yes, yes. It's interesting. Cache picked up two of the five projects. Hunt picked up the three other projects. And they're actually listed. And when you Google the top 20 electrical contractors in the U.S., these are both on that list. So we have, and they have worked for us before in the past. Very good contractors.
Randall, when do you anticipate, you know, breaking ground on that project? You're still in February?
Well, we're going to try to, the contractor wants to do the foundations during the winter when it's cooler for their guys. So we're going to probably let them go in January, February. But actually, the work can't start until we get the insulators in to make sure that we can frame the poles. And those are March. Hopefully, they'll be here in March, so we'll let them start in April of next year. Next slide. Go ahead. Do you have any other questions on that?
I was just hoping that would be done before summer.
No. We try to do that for these contractors coming from cold country to try to work in the wintertime, but this is a longer project, and it's just going to go through summer. Yeah, it's going to be a tough one for them. This is the Escape Solar site. If you can see the little drilling piece of equipment on the middle right, that's where the pylons are starting, and this is block one of two blocks. And so they're actually starting to get ready to set panels out there. We're still anticipating a June agreement to start up.
This is out north of the
yeah,
this in our riding area?
Yeah. Well, it used to be your riding area.
Formerly known as.
It's good. You get to find new places to ride, right? New adventure. Next slide, please. We continue to work in Raptor Substation. This is showing the rest of the foundations being completed, and we anticipate the contractor moving in to do the rest of the sub early next year sometime. Next
when,
slide.
When do they start on the line for that one?
It's going to be the same, about the same time. We're going to let them do all, Hunt has all of these projects in Mesquite, so we're going to let them come in and do all the foundations and then start the work, line work, after they cure up. Next slide. This is the old three-pole structure in Tortoise Substation, RG1 we call it, and this is the one that's caught fire before, and it's an all-wood structure. Now we're getting ready to replace that structure and adding foundations and steel poles that will go in just behind those, and then it'll terminate on the ring bus. And we plan to start that project, we started the project. We hope to have it done by the end of this year or early next year. And that will be, we'll only have maybe one more wood structure inside the sub that we need to replace, and that'll be at the end of 2025 or 2026 on the 138 line going out. We still have one wood pole in there.
Our guys are doing this?
Excuse me?
Are our guys doing this?
Our guys are doing this right here, but they won't do the foundation. They're doing the we had to move that structure back to the south a little ways because the guys are right where the foundations are going to go. That's my report. If you have any questions. Now, oh, Judy.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, are you seeing, and I know it's too early, but maybe in anticipation of the election, are you seeing any of your wait times for equipment lessening? Are they still being a year or 2 years out?
No. Yeah, our materials are still out there.
They're going to wait until it all happens. Yeah. Okay.
And you know, a lot of it's with all the damage back in the east and the south.
Yeah, that's all.
A lot of the places they're getting first priority, right?
Yeah.
Because they're out. So, yeah.
Because I have family back there, I signed up on a couple of websites to kind of watch it.
Yeah.
It's just amazing what the power companies back there are doing.
They're doing it. They're using a lot of materials too.
They're using a lot of material, yeah. A lot of men, a lot of trucks, yeah. A lot of everything, and it seems like a lot of different companies have come together to, you know, out of their territory or into another territory in the reciprocation type thing.
Yes.
Work out. It kind of made me think we do it on a much smaller scale here when we have Dixie and we have Lincoln and we do reciprocate work. So I just wondered if anything was changing yet.
Not yet. Hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Randall. Kyle. Where's Kyle? Oh, there he is. Line operations report.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay. So for service installations for the month of October, we had 50 residential installations, no commercial hookups. Planned outages and unplanned outages for the month of October. We had 10 planned outages and 4 unplanned outages. For those unplanned outages, you can look down through that report there on the right, and you can kind of get a understanding of what we report through our processes. You see some unknowns and you see some burns down there. So unknowns are a struggle for me to wrap my mind around. You always want to find evidence of what caused the outage. There's only so much manpower you can throw at it to patrol until you can just say, you know what, we've extended all efforts and we're going to have to title it as an unknown. Birds, I believe you'll see more and more of those. If you make notice of the beautiful starlings blowing through the sky, they like to sit on our power lines and they cause outages for us. The big one there in the red is the system-wide outage we had October 29th. That affected every one of our customers here at Overton Power for 86 minutes. There, and that was a CTVT failure inside Taurus substation.
What was it?
CTVT.
What is a CVT?
Okay, this is current transformer, voltage transformer. It's basically a meter.
It's a combination metering transformer for the metering.
Basically, the
shelf fan.
It's a voltage transformer. It's not like a big power transformer. It's a metering transformer.
It looks like a giant insulator.
Yeah, it's right here.
12 foot tall. It's about 12 foot tall.
So that one on the left, you can see it's still smoldering, and basically that's the meter coming in from that, well, what will be Reed Gardner number one, which Randall just spoke on. That's the one that faulted and caused this outage here.
How long had it been energized?
Roughly 12 hours.
Okay, so it wasn't instantaneous.
No. It had made it all through the commissioning process, both in-house by our contractors, but also from the manufacturer. It made it through the testing processes, made it in the air. It was installed for a month and then energized for roughly 12 hours before it faulted on us.
Who would have warranted it?
So the manufacturer has been to our site already. They were there days after, just a few days after this incident, saw it on site and saw the whole entire process, questioned the contractor. But then also they paid to ship it back to their manufacturing, and they're continuing that reporting on that, or that investigation, and they'll issue us a full report once they're finished with that.
Do they give a new one to us, or do we wait for that to be refurbished?
No, they won't refurbish this one. Yeah, it'll be a new one.
Can we get it pretty soon?
This is very rare for them. This is a trusted manufacturer of ours that we feel very confident with them, and all the reporting they're giving us, this is extremely rare coming out of them. So can we give an estimate of like replacement and the report? We don't know. It's just gonna take some time because it's not familiar to them. They're gonna do their due diligence for us.
but we don't know the timeline for it yet. But we expect them to.
But you had a replacement.
We had a spare one in stock.
We had a spare one in stock, yeah. And we replaced it already.
Oh, sorry. If you're asking, yes. Yeah. Sorry about that. If you're asking for a replacement, then yes, it was replaced that day.
Sorry, Kyle. This equipment is roughly a year to a year and a half need on this equipment. And so he said he would put us ahead of everybody in the queue because it is a failure. But still, we're looking at close to a year. So we do have three. We have some in stock that we're replacing already. So.
Thank you.
And as Randall reported, that happened during the worst possible time because we had that RG1 line out of service for that furthering construction inside the Tortoise Ring bus. So it limited us on our two feeds. Now, it's a benefit that we do have that ring bus and it gives us a lot more capability with our switching. So we have power back on within, an hour and 26 minutes is what it was. So in the past, when we were limited with our abilities, this could have been much longer, but that was very great for our crews to respond and get that power back on in that time frame. Any other questions on that before I move on?
Do you put a report of this on the website? A lot of people ask what happened. And so last time I looked at it, of course, it was sometime a short time after you restored power. Did you finally put up what happened and all that sort of stuff?
We did. Yes.
Yeah. I believe it's on there. Yes.
So I look there now, I'll find it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I won't have to ask you again.
Yep. Some of the projects our department is working on, the crews tasked them with getting our utilities and contractors in our areas trained, high voltage hazards, and working around our systems. We started with the Mott Valley Water District and Phone Company here in town. They come to our facility. We used our amazing trailer that we built this last year, and we had a good training with them. We talked about all the risks and hazards, not only living around our live lines, but working around them. A lot of their personnel that were at our training were the men that excavate, lay conduit, work on the power poles with their power lines attached to it. So it was a great training, and we had a great attendance. We had 24 people in attendance for that training there. The safety committee has been tasked with going outside and above and beyond our normal safety trainings and finding other trainings that they can add to our schedules that will challenge us and get us further knowledge. This is one BD was able to put together. BD Long is our safety committee chairman. She was able to get Southwest Gas from Mesquite to come over to this room right here and give us a demonstration on all the risks with having gas in our trenches and in our lives. It was a great training. We had a great attendance. We had most of the company here. It worked out to be a time when we could shut down the front office, and we had an amazing attendance here. It was a good training, very good training. And that safety committee is going to continue working on finding other trainings that we can get outside of our normal safety training, scheduled trainings. And the safety meeting for the month, we had a topic of substation inspections, maintenance, and operations, and we had 52 people in attendance for that. So great attendance for that. And that's my report, unless you have any other questions.
Okay, thank you, Kyle. Kevin, sub-ops report.
Okay. First thing I want to report about is the Tortoise Substation Ring Bus Phase 1 has been completed. I know you guys are going to be excited about that because I'll stop reporting about it. this was a very stressful cutover for me and my crew and probably everybody else, but because everything had to be timed just right or, you know, bad things happen. And I think it was fairly successful, except for our combo unit, failing on us. Other than that, I think it was quite a successful cutover. But you can see
This is a shot of our substation before it's completed. And you can see these two big A-frame towers and string bus in between. This is what it looks like now. Those A-frames are gone, and that string bus is down. Now everything is connected into this rain bus right here through hard bus all the way through.
Back it up one, like do switch back.
Okay. Big A-frames.
Okay.
Okay. Little A-frames.
All right.
Looks a lot cleaner. It's strange driving up there when you're used to seeing those big A-frame towers and they're gone. So it's exciting. It's exciting for me, you know, seeing the progress move along.
What is this bay down here with the yellow pad?
That's the new 6960 MVA transformer.
Okay.
That is the containment, the oil containment, and that's the decking on the oil containment pad. Something this engineer firm spec'd that out. We've never used it before, but I like it. I think it's going to be nice to have that. So.
In the pictures, it almost looks like it's been added in. It doesn't look real, does it? But that's what it looks like.
And this is a different view. There's those three pole structures that Kyle was talking about. Kyle or Randall?
Randall, yeah, I'm Randall.
Randall was talking about it. And then this right here, that is that CMU unit right there. That's where it sits in that picture. Mm. One other thing that we've been working on is with ICPE, our engineering firm that's doing the engineering on this 75 MVA transformer is scheduled to be replaced with 120 MVA transformer. And they've built that spec, and they've got that spec, and they're going to probably put that out for bid this week. And hopefully we'll have some information back about that new transformer. So what that's going to do is all of the studies that they do for us, they do a minus one, so they take one transformer out of the system, which is one of our transformers in there, and then they do their study off of that, and they said, for future growth, that transformer is too small, we need to upgrade it, and so that's what we're doing, is upgrading that transformer.
Don't we use it somewhere else, or sell it? Or?
There's a few different options we have. One is to sell it, obviously, long lead items, we could probably sell it pretty easily. The other option is to move it from here to where this transformer is, and build that bus work out and have all three of them in parallel. And it would just give us that much more efficiency or reliability, redundancy. And another option is to move that transformer somewhere else to, in our system, to supply, you know, something somewhere else if the need arises. So we've got a few years. It's going to take, some of the estimates were, you know, 3 to 5 years on this transformer to get it built and shipped to us. So we've got a couple of years to figure it out what we're going to do with it. So, okay, any questions on that? Okay, it's just a diagram we threw in there in case anybody had questions. We took delivery on our long drive substation building. That's another building that we've got. That's its final resting place. And this is that long drive right next to Pulte. You can see Pulte Homes is here. And that's our line that comes in up by this is the long drive complex. That substation will be built right underneath these power lines right here. So, anyway. We also received the Raptor transformer. There it is. I don't have any pictures of it being offloaded, but there it is at its final resting spot. They are going to be here the first week of January to dress that transformer. So we'll have it dressed about the time the construction crew comes in to start building that substation. So
what will that end up being, a 20 megawatt then?
20 MVA. So that's my report unless you have questions for me.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Elisa.
Okay, at the end of last month, Colorado River Commission held their annual all-customer meeting. We discussed hydrology and generational outlook, costs and initiatives, and the Parker Davis remarketing. our contract for Parker Davis is through September of 2028. So we will likely start negotiations on that contract maybe as early as 2025, for sure by 2026. The meeting was held at Hoover Dam, and so after the meeting, that included a dam tour. I've never been inside the dam, so the meeting was great, but the tour was incredible. The craftsmanship of work that those men did in the 30s is, it's honestly, it's breathtaking. Like, I've never been so intrigued by tile, but it just spoke to my OCD heart how perfectly lined every one of those tiles were. One of the things that I thought was so cool, they had two turbines were running when we were up on the deck overlooking, and then we went past them to go outside, and one of them started, and the rush of water going into that turbine is like it almost shakes the air out of your lungs. It is just unbelievable. And when I looked at the nameplate on that turbine, it was installed in 1938. So I thought that was so cool. Very, very good meeting, and I loved the tour. We have been working to prepare to respond to our annual Fitch rating. We have that call is scheduled for tomorrow. All the documentation has been sent to them, and I'm looking forward to some good conversations with their analysts. I'll bring back any results to you guys when we receive those. In early 2019, Mendes led discussions that resulted in the stipulations and settlement agreement with NV Energy. A piece of that agreement stated that the second 230 kV line from Reed Gardner to Tortoise would be installed. And at that time, Overton Power would then receive what are called NITS rights. And so NITS is Network Integration Transmission System. And RG2, as reported, was energized in October. So we are now working closely with both Tenaska and NV Energy to work on that NITS application to get that set up in their system. That's quite the undertaking, but we're getting really good help from both NV Energy and Tenaska. And as we complete that process, I will report back to you on any budget implications or changes that we'll see. We have a four-year transition period that started when we energize that works up until we become a full NITS customer. And so we'll work through that process. And I mentioned that Tenaska is helping us with that process. We continue to prepare for the transition from Morgan Stanley over to Tenaska. I just have to say on record, I will miss working with the Morgan Stanley people. They are genuinely amazing people, and they have, it makes me emotional. They have been wonderful. So 8 years of good friendship with them, but the people from Tenaska are equally as amazing. They have given us so much help, and there's a lot of moving parts to a transition of this nature. So they have a transition team that has been working with us every step of the way. They also are working with NV Energy and Colorado River Commission, and eventually will work with Escape Solar as well. Kevin's team has been working on the metering information and all of that access. And all of this comes with a lot of meetings and phone calls and emails. But I feel like things are going incredibly well, and we're pleased with the transition so far. And I believe that Morgan Stanley is working hard to help make that transition successful as well. My last thing that I just wanted to give you guys some notice on. As you know, I was elected to the Regulatory Standing Committee for NRECA to represent Region 9. That meeting for that committee is scheduled for January 15th, which is also our regularly scheduled board meeting for January. So in December, we will present to you guys a calendar for 2025, and I am going to ask that you allow us to move the January meeting to the 22nd of January instead. So I just want to put that on your radar so you guys can think about that now, and we'll discuss it next month. And that's all I have for my report. Thank you.
Any questions for me, Lisa?
Your tour over at the dam didn't include getting to float down the river and look at the one-eyed fish or whatever they were.
No. I didn't float down the river, but I did feel like we were packed into that elevator And that is so many feet going down. And I thought, please, Lord, let me make it out of here. Oh, my gosh. That was the only part that I did not enjoy was the elevator ride. But other than that, it was amazing.
Just as a follow-up to Melissa's reporting on the stipulation agreement with NV Energy, when we talked with NV Energy, we set up the transition date to be January 1st so that it would coincide with when we switched over to Tenasca. So that way we're not asking Morgan Stanley to change their procedures. Tenasca will be set up and be able to take that right from the get-go, and NV Energy was very good to work with us on setting that date. But this is a real milestone because in that agreement, we had transition period one waiting for that transmission line to be completed. We're now entering transition period two, and that means we're going to see our old legacy transmission agreement start to unwind. We'll start seeing every year our free transmission decrease and some things like that. So it's going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to let you know that. You know, Scott talked about some of the cyber threats we get. I actually had an interesting experience. Last Friday, I scanned some documents and I couldn't find them. I looked on my looked through my files and I found that when I'd scanned them, it had sent them to my spam file. And when I looked in the spam file, there were three messages that said, "You better read this." So I looked at it, and it said that somebody had hacked my email, and they gave me an address, and they said, "If you send $9,500 in Bitcoin by November 20th, they will restore my data." And so I called Stephen in, and Stephen, bless his heart, I said, "I don't think this is real because some of the threats seem kind of hokey." But I said, "Stephen, will you look at this and make sure that it's not a threat?" And I was very impressed with how Stephen broke that down. We took some security steps, and then Stephen continued to analyze that and found that it was actually a threat that had come from Russia. So it kind of gets the hair on your neck to stand up when you see that. So it was kind of an unsettling thing, but I appreciate our team being able to handle that. So kudos to Stephen and Merlin for handling that.
That is a common threat going out. We got it at Mills and Anderson as well. Supposedly they were able to get our data and wanted us to pay a whole lot of money to get it back. It wasn't true. That what they're hoping is we will give them information that they then can have access and steal and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the moral of the story is don't poke around your spam folder. Just it's there for a reason.
Spam folder comes. And the bottom line of things like that is they're not looking for the money. They're looking for the information. They're hoping that you will respond to them or say something that actually gets them in there.
Yeah. Well, thanks to our training, Scott, I didn't click on anything. Okay, so I didn't want to be in the doghouse. 2 weeks ago, I attended the CREDA annual meeting in Tempe, Arizona. And one of the things that I was anticipating to have happen is we were going to elect a new slate of officers, and I was going to be done with my duties at CREDA, but it didn't come out that way. We did add a couple new officers to the group, but we didn't change out the existing president. So I'm still on the CREDA executive committee as the past president, and I will continue to fill that role until we replace the existing president or until I retire. So just want to let you know that I'm still functioning with CREDA. Wanted to give you a little bit of a legislative update. At our CREDA meeting, we got a legislative update from the CREDA Washington, D.C. lobbyist. And he gave us about an hour-long presentation. I'm going to break this down into about a minute. But he said one of the things that we can expect is with the Senate being won by the Republicans, that we should see the cabinet positions filled quicker than normal. The last few presidencies, it's taken them years to fill all of the slots, and I believe when, by the time Trump left office last time, all of them hadn't even been filled yet. So we anticipate that changing. He threw a question out to us. He says, what will Trump do with this opportunity? He said, that, you know, there's no clear direction yet, but he says we could see changes to budget and spending priorities, regulatory actions, energy policy, the power plant rule, the Endangered Species Act, taxes, and social programs. And then one of the things that's also in that mix is, if you remember, Trump instituted a lot of tariffs and wanted a lot of American-made things before he left office last time. And that included a lot of the materials that are made in the energy sector, like transformers. And so your question to Randall a little bit earlier, will the Trump presidency speed up our deliveries? If you read the tea leaves from the last presidency, it's probably going to slow them down a little bit, because he wants everything U.S. made, and he's going to put tariffs on things that come from outside the country. So that'll be something we have to watch out for. The other thing we need to watch out for is, last time President Trump was in office, he wanted to divest the PMAs, power marketing agencies, like WAPA and the Bonneville Power Association, Tennessee Valley Authority. He wanted to privatize all those. We fought against that. We are getting prepared to fight against that again, because power users, as part of those projects, we've paid for those projects and paid the interest and upkeep and everything. If those projects are privatized, we lose all of our buy-in of those things. We don't know what will happen with those projects. So we have the existing agreements in place, which is good, but you never know operationally how some of those things are going to go. So that's one thing that we're keeping our eyes on. We had a discussion at NREA about the statewide elections. I guess the big thing to report there is the Democrats were hoping to get a supermajority in the legislature so they could override the governor's vetoes, and they didn't achieve that. The other thing that was worrisome is we heard a lot of talk about the Democrats in the state wanting to counter all of the Trump policies that go into place. And so they wanted to do some things that were, some of them were a little bit worrisome to us. So we'll see how things go, but not having the supermajority is going to be helpful to us, I believe. I just want to let you know we're continuing to get a lot of interest from developers that want to move into our area. And it's almost like every day we're getting a call from somebody that wants to do a data center, wants to process hydrogen, wants to do something, that's looking to come in our area, and they want to know, you know, how many hundreds of megawatts can they move into our area. And it's going to be quite an interesting experience over the next few months. My last item is I want to let you know that we had our NREA budget and dues discussion. We have a meeting coming up in a couple of weeks where we will finalize those. Our budget will go up a little bit. We shouldn't see tremendous change from last time, right? That was the last bit of news that I heard. Those of you that went to the annual meeting in October, we did select a new slate of officers. So I have two things left to do as president of NREA. I'm going to have my performance review with the executive director next week, and then I will attend the fly-in in D.C. in December, and then my duties with NREA will be done.
They were proposing to hire additional staff to help her out.
Yes.
Isn't that going to increase the budget somewhat?
It will, but we have enough left over from previous years. Part of the discussion that we'll have at our prompt meeting is how much money do we want NRA to have in savings that's our money, and some of that's going to get applied to this new hire. Can't tell you how that's going to break down yet, but we will decide that at our meeting.
And when that runs out, then there's a dues increase.
Then the dues will go up. Yes, they will.
But not on Mendes' watch.
That's right. That's right.
Congratulations.
There's two things that I didn't want to do. I didn't want to have to replace our executive director, and I didn't want to have to raise our dues significantly. I'll escape both of those things. So that's my report, unless you have any questions for me. Okay. Jonathan, would you like to give us the financial report?
All right, good afternoon. We'll start with the statement of operations on line one. Our operating revenues for the month of October, $4,255,000. Line three, our cost of purchase power is $1,910,000, which brings us to our line 20 total cost of electric service, just $3,129,000. Line 22, we have our interest received on investments at $135,000, and our line 29 total margins for October are $1,260,000, which brings us to our total year-to-date margins in column B at the bottom of $10,870,000. On the asset side of our balance sheet, line five, we have our net utility plant value of $133,432,000. Line eight, investments in associated organizations. Line 15, cash. Line 18, temporary investments. Line 23, materials and supplies, all contributing to our total asset value of the company at $183,017,000. On the liability side, our line 36 margins and equities total $126,490,000. We have our debt on line 43, long-term debt, line 48 accounts payables, and again our line 57 total liabilities, balancing our assets at $183,017,000. Here's a breakdown of our cash held in our checking accounts. We have a monthly ending balance of $3,744,000. Our assets held in our investment accounts with our Morton Advisors account, $30,378,000, and in our Goldman Sachs account at $620,000. Here's the breakdown of our assets held in our Morton account by security type in the pie graph and by security duration in the bar graph. As of October 31st, OPD has a total of 18,669 total customers. Our modified debt service coverage ratio is, with estimates throughout the end of the year, is 2.58. Our equity as a percentage of assets, 69%. And our times interest earned ratio is 8.46. We received a total of 68 connection fees in October, valued at $68,113. And for our billing arrangements, we have a total of 14 residential customers valued at $7,078. And we have three commercial customers valued at $308. Around our program, we just cut the checks. I'm not 100% positive they've been delivered yet, but that balance, they have been delivered.
I saw the pictures on Instagram today, so they've been delivered.
Perfect. Great. So those checks have been delivered to the Virgin Valley High School and Maverick Valley High School, and we have started over, and those are the balances there in our
beginning. I do have one question. On your connection fees, October, we collected $68,000, right? Mm-hmm. And so the developer or whoever's putting in the service has to pay us that fee to install the meter and connection.
Correct.
That's what that is. Okay.
Yeah. Before, so that those weren't actually installed. Meters installed, those were fees received to install for the future.
Well, what is the fee for then? If the meter
it's to do the work. So it's prepaid.
Oh, future work.
Future work, yeah.
Because they get a connection, so it says quantity 58, doesn't mean they're actually in service right now. It
correct.
Simply means they will be soon, and
They've paid their deposit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gotcha. It's not technically a work cost, though. It's more to buy in for the system, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the... Go ahead.
It's kind of both, Rich, right? You know, they're buying in the system. There's substation fees in there. There's the connection fee. And then there's still, we have to do the work to connect. And there could be some infrastructure work that needs to be done also. So it's a combination of both.
Is it standard, or like if you move a mile down the lane or whatever, is it yours going to be more?
It's going to be more, yeah.
And those fees are on our, they're summed on our balance sheet back here on a line 56, other deferred credits. The majority of that are where those fees are, work that we have received, or payments that we have received that we haven't started on yet. There's a breakdown of our loans held with CFC. We have a total outstanding balance of $47,619,000. Our next quarterly payment is due on December 31st in the amount of $1,485,000. That's scheduled to be made on time and paid in full. Our average interest rate with discounts on all of these loans is 3.35%. And here's a breakdown of our revenue by customer class. And on this slide, we have the totals down at the bottom summarized. So our monthly cost of power is 5.19%, our monthly revenue 10.33%, and our 2024 average cost of power is 4.93%. Sorry, cents.
Yes, cents.
Those are all cents. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan.
Okay.
Review and possible approval of a land purchase in Moapa for possible action.
Okay, I've asked Randall to present this item to you. So, Randall, we'll turn the time to you.
Okay, so we're looking at, do we have the picture of the next slide there? Okay, so this land, this is up in Moapa. We have Glendale Substation, and then we have the new land outlined in purple there. It's about 5 acres of land, and that would be to expand that substation for future growth. And also the amount that we're paying for the land will be incorporated in future fees to new connections in that area. So as we build up, we'll add that to their fees as they connect and be part of a, we'll be able to recoup that over years, the investment. There are no comparable comps up there in Moapa right now for commercial land. There are some down in Overton. There's two listings. One is $35,000 per acre down in the Sand Hill. Well, it's in the lower valley, but it's zone flood. It's in the flood zone. There is another parcel in Overton that's about $87,000 an acre, which is similar to the price that we sold our land at in 2022. So there's a range of $40,000 to $80,000 for the few comparable sales. But like I said, there's nothing in Moapa commercial-wise that's for sale up there.
How soon will we need it, though?
It would be potentially in a couple, 3 years.
Really? And who's selling this land?
It's actually a person out of Mesquite. Theron Jensen is the owner. Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we're very prudent to purchase it. It's our main substation in that site. And there's just no ability to grow at that existing site.
Well, and we're also worried that with the projects, if they start to develop, that those land prices are really going to come up.
Yeah.
Is that substation going to, would that feed, like, I know, like you mentioned, there's a number of people wanting to come, probably be around the railheads and stuff. Is that the substation that's going to feed all that growth?
Well, it'll come out of that site, but that, you know, Kevin showed the transformer that we put in Raptor Substation was a 20 MVA. The transformer we have here is a 7.5. So we're going to have to do some upgrades to this substation if things start to develop around there. But for the time being, that'll work until we start seeing some significant growth.
It'll feed the residential, small commercial. If a data center comes in, they'll be directly connected high voltage at probably 230. So we would take 230 directly to one of their substations.
And you got to remember,
like on site.
On their site,
right. It wouldn't necessarily come out of here.
Correct. Yeah.
This was the original substation in 1938 that fed the whole system. And it's still a lot of the same footprint that we met. And so this substation site is going to have to be totally rebuilt at that point when it's done. And so it's a much bigger footprint than what's there.
Is this like the best location for the future growth?
It's pretty centrally located in the area, yeah.
And it's just off the highway, so it's
just
not,
off the highway, it has
not
good
like
access.
Some of the things rattlesnake.
It's not in your view, is it, Chad?
It's not a pretty place, so go ahead.
So let's put it this way, it's going to look better than it does right now. Are there any more comments or questions? Do I hear a motion?
I'll make the motion that we... I'm looking for the motion number here.
Just at the very bottom. Period,
right here. To approve the 5.02 acres of land in Glendale for a purchase price of $250,000.
As presented.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the purchase of 5.02 acres of land adjacent to Glendale Substation for $250,000 as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. We have item I, review and possible approval of 2025 capital projects for possible action.
Okay, Stephen, if you'll bring up, yes, that's the spreadsheet, the 10-year forecast of capital projects, and as we've talked about before, this includes all of our reliability projects. This is this sheet is essentially our 10-year plan of everything that we see coming up in the future that we feel relatively certain is going to happen that we need to do to continue to keep our system functionally operational and to meet the growth and the demand that's out there. You can see by looking at the bottom of this list, we have 27 items. They add up to nearly $71 million. So what we do each year is we take the items off this list and we move them into our annual capital project discussion and just show you the ones that we're going to work on and try to accomplish in the next year and a half. So, Stephen, if you would go to the other spreadsheet that shows the capital projects, and let's go to the tab for year 10. You see it on there? When I pulled it up, that tab would come up. Go to not the GM file.
Is it in GM?
No.
Yeah, I am.
Check the spam folder.
There it is. It's up. Go to that 10-year. No. Yeah, go to the 10-year tab down at the bottom right. Okay, so these are the projects we moved off that last list and that we have for this year. Now, this is the list that we showed you last month. We, after our meeting last month, we sat down together on a staff meeting and went through these things. One of the things that we have postponed is Down at the bottom on line 17 is the Overton Crew Barn. That was about a $2 million project. That's in permitting right now, and we think it's going to be in permitting for a while anyway. So we've taken that off our list. But the rest of the list includes a lot of things that you've heard Kevin and Randall and Kyle talk about, the Tortoise to Gila 138 line, Tortoise Sub 230 kV ring bus getting finished up, spare breaker and equipment for the substation, Falcon Ridge Bay 2, and so on. You can read down through that list and see those are all projects that we've talked about. In addition to that, we have long lead items like a couple of bucket trucks and digger derrick trucks that will be on our list that I believe one of them, Kyle, is going to be delivered in 2025. Was it?
Other one's in 2027.
In 27?
27, so.
On line 12, I think it was number 54 is the one that's supposed to be?
2025.
Yeah.
That's the bucket truck.
Yeah.
Is that lead time issues, or is that when we need
them? That's lead time issues. What? Right now, if we put an order for a truck, it's 3 years at least. Oh. Okay, so now let's go to the sub-ops folder, Stephen.
Sure.
We'll just work our way up. We didn't take anything off this list. We thought everything on here needed to continue to move forward. Line ops, replacing a couple of smaller vehicles, and then the wire trailer. We decided that we were going to leave those on. Financial didn't submit anything. Engineering, there was Randall relooked at the Sand Hill Boulevard project, and we changed the total amount on that and adjusted that to what it needed to be. Go to admin. There was only a couple of items on there, but one of them was the crew barn that we've crossed off. So we go to the summary page. So we anticipate in 2025 that we're going to have $5.5 million in anticipated margin, and then you can see the breakdown from those tabs for each department, admin, engineering, and so on. Those projects add up to roughly $4 million. That leaves excess margin at about $1.5 million. The reliability projects from the 10-year plan total $28,660,000. So we take that $1 million off that total, and that leaves us with $27,137,000 that will come out of our savings that was shown earlier.
In 25
and early 26. Do you have any questions for me?
The truck that's coming, or those two trucks we talked about, you going to put money down on those?
Typically, when we order them, we don't have to, but...
Do you lock a price in? Or
yeah,
or?
We do.
Usually about halfway through, they ask for some money?
We set up the initial cost. I think it was just a small fraction up front that we pay.
Okay.
Usually we pay for the chassis.
Yeah, and it secures our spot in the queue by doing that.
And then your cost is locked in as well, right?
It is, yes.
On the line operations, you have a security fence $500,000 to move some guys.
No, this is a different project.
Oh.
Well, we will be glad to give you specifics.
$500,000 there, right? I'll move guide wires and complete dirt work.
That's
the fancy 138 tower. There's guys.
But I thought the fencing was more than that.
It is. But this is to take those wood poles that Randall was talking about and make them steel.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that includes the steel poles.
Yeah.
Okay.
The guy wires go through.
We talked about that. I forgot that.
It says security fencing.
That's to do the work so we can put in the security fencing.
Correct. For security fencing, right?
Yes.
But also replace wood poles.
Those are the three wood poles that Randall showed in his slide. that there's three poles, two of them have been hit by lightning so far. And we've had long outages because of that. So this is going to take care of those three poles.
Not going to leave them as a lightning arrestor.
Well, they say lightning never strikes the same place twice, but it does there. So sorry, I got a little confused on that. Apologize.
Is there any more discussion or comments? Questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the 2025 capital projects as presented?
So moved. Second.
Okay. By Dale, by Jack. It's been moved and seconded to approve the 2025 capital projects as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I do have one comment. On your 10-year forecast,
yes.
A couple of projects that are in the future seem like wonderful opportunities to try to get funding for a grant, which is 28 security projects, which we're just discussing, and the 69 KV loop around the Napa Valley.
Yes.
Seem like those would be wonderful to put in a grant request. It's time, you know, that takes a long time to get them, and they seem to have the right verbiage.
On the security projects, we did put in for a grant, but we were denied the grant. But we don't have a start date on the loop, 69 loop around Napa Valley. When we do, we will certainly follow your recommendation and apply for a grant for that.
Yeah. We do have somebody writing the grants for us, right?
Well, we have a team that does that, so... It can be a pretty arduous process, and so if we want to get more involved in grant writing, we have some ways that we can do that, and we'll talk to you when that becomes an issue.
Yeah, sometimes it pays to hire somebody who does that sort of thing for a living.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Well, I think one of the things that had come up when Horsford was up here was a lot of times, because we're small fish, those bigger companies get the grants, and we're left hanging. So we need to find a way around that. Hopefully he said he would help us with it.
Well, he says he will help, but we'll work on that.
Supposedly he said he would help.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Just one side note from these projects, too. If you remember a couple of years ago, we borrowed $26 million when the interest rates were low in anticipation of doing these projects. When we did that, we told you we were going to borrow $26 million, and then we anticipated that 2 years later we would need to borrow some more money. Well, here we are a couple of years down the road, and we're still trying to complete these projects. So that next borrowing, Elisa and I have talked about this, we're thinking that the next borrowing may get pushed out to, 2027, if things continue as they are, or if we run into roadblocks and slowdowns, it might be a little bit out past that. But our next borrowing should be a couple of years away.
We pay off a lot of our debts in 28, right?
Yes.
September 28, they pay off.
Well, if your lead times don't change on the supplies that are needed, you don't pay for all that up front, do you?
No.
So your lead times have changed. And hopefully maybe in those years in between then and now, some of those prices drop from when you originally ordered them.
Yeah.
So maybe some of these expenses will drop. See, positive.
Well, think positive.
Okay. Our next item, J, review and possible approval of a non-disclosure agreement with Monarch Power Incorporated for possible action.
Mr. Ozaki is handling this one as well.
Great. This is a typical non-disclosure that we've shared before. Byron has reviewed it, and it fits all of the things that we need to have in an NDA that we're okay signing. This is probably one of the few that has come with us that has actually reached out wanting to pay for some studies. So there's a couple studies that we have to perform on our side that are around $100,000 in cost that they're willing to pay for now to start those. And so this potentially could be a, a customer down the road. They're at least willing to pay for the studies, which a lot of them, once we talked about studies, they kind of shy away when they talk about dollars. So this really binds them to some outlay, cash outlay, to see how interested they are.
I move we approve the non-disclosure agreement with Monarch Power Inc.
Can I ask one question first? I just want to ask Byron, how did you feel about it?
I did review it and approved it. I always look for clauses to make sure we're okay having discussions in this board meeting, in these board meetings, whether in private, you know, closed door or open door. I approved this one. It had the appropriate language that covered us in the case that we needed to discuss things in the board meeting.
Okay. All right.
It's your turn. You
have
the vote, right? Yep. We don't have a second.
Was there a second?
No.
I'll second.
Oh. No, I didn't hear a second.
I'll second.
Who was that?
Bob.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the revisions to Escape Solar LLC. Purchase I've turned too many pages.
Tell us a little bit about a hydrogen facility. What would you tell us about a hydrogen facility?
Well, here's what I know in the short term is that they produce, they actually make hydrogen, and they also want to generate, and they use like solar. They buy solar and they generate, and they call it a certain
green
hydrogen. And so green hydrogen has a different market out there, and so that's what data centers like. They like green power, so these guys would help feed a data center. And they would, you know, produce hydrogen also and ship hydrogen. So it's a combination type of situation.
There we go. Okay. Round it up on the board, Judy. Okay. Okay, give it back. Okay. So to approve a non-disclosure agreement with Monarch Power Inc. as presented, and authorize the general manager CEO to execute the agreement. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
You know, Byron brought up something that I would like to just ask you too. That do you want us to bring all these NDAs to you, or are you comfortable with us signing a non-disclosure agreement with somebody without that coming to the board, as long as it's been reviewed by the attorney?
I think I'd recommend it doesn't have a financial implication or impact, and you guys are comfortable with it, I'm okay.
An NDA doesn't bind us to anything other than preventing us from disclosing private information, confidential information. So that's what I'd suggest is that we bring to the board that they are able to enter into those non-disclosure agreements without having to bring it to the board, so as to not delay things and stuff like that. And of course, before they can enter into anything that binds us to financial contracts, and then those would have to come to the board. So I don't think it's necessary to bring NDAs to the board every time. There's going to be a lot of situations where we'll sign an NDA, they'll do the homework and decide not to contract with us. That would be my future recommendation.
Byron, do we need to make that an action item for a few, next board meeting?
I would probably suggest, just because historically we have always brought NDAs to the board, I would probably suggest that at the next board meeting we give you guys the authority to enter into any NDAs in the future.
Okay.
So we need to write a policy? Is that right? We need to write a policy that you approve that, or you just give
us... Or just have them apply, or just state that you can enter NDAs would be fine, and we'll keep it in board minutes. And
I think we'd just like a report of those, so we can just see what's happening out there. You know, just as you do a report on any of those that come in, so we can see what's coming in the future.
And what happens then, we can have that discussion in closed door. We have one, for example, I won't mention who it is, because they don't want even the fact that they have an NDA discussed. And that creates a problem, because we have to have that right now
as a part of this board meeting for you guys to enter into that NDA. So we would be violating at the moment we vote on it. And so otherwise we could then just move straight into closed door and discuss those things without having had that discussion here.
I think it's important for the board to be immediately aware of anything we entered into because they apply to us.
And you can give, and those are the directions, in, if we put it on the agenda, those are the directions you guys can think about and give to the to our management. Okay, yes, you have the authority to enter into any NDAs. However, at each board meeting, we want this, this, and this directed to us and explained to us and brought to us and blah, blah, blah.
And so, even in an executive session,
in it would need to be an executive session at that point, yes.
Okay, so now, we're backwards. Okay, review and possible approval of Escape Solar Purchase Power Agreement, the PPA, and consent and agreement for possible action.
Okay, thank you. Melissa is going to handle this item.
Okay. In November of 2023, the Board of Trustees approved a PPA with Escape Solar. They are a subsidiary of Estuary Power for 25 megawatts of solar generation for a 25-year period. That installation is going right in Bob's backyard. and again, we'll say for the record, we had nothing to do with the placement of the solar field. But a portion of that PPA stated, or it obliges OPD5 to provide consent to collateral agreement. Escape will borrow money to fund a portion of their project, and they will pledge equity in that project for their lenders. So the lender requires assurance that if they foreclose on the project or they take over, that we will not immediately terminate our PPA, that they have the right to still serve power to us and bill us. And so this is a routine part of large project financing, and Escape is proceeding with their financing, and they have presented to us a consent and agreement with First Citizens Bank and Trust Company. Stephen, if you'll go to the next page, please. During that contract negotiation of the PPA, it was noted that OPD5 cannot take or sell renewable energy credits. Part of the RPS standards that were set and us being left out of those renewable portfolio standards were that we could not have RECs generated on our behalf and then us sell them. So when these negotiations were done with Escape, they said, we're going to sell you the energy for this amount, and then we're going to take the RECs and market them. As they've went through this financing process, the lenders have come back and said, you don't have right to sell the RECs that are going to Overton Power. So they ask us if we would change some verbiage in our PPA that says that that energy can either go to us or our energy manager, who will at the time be Tenasca. Tenasca is doing this on behalf of their other customers that are receiving power from this same project, and so there was some verbiage that needed to be changed. We sent this both to Byron, and we also hired Ann Pongrantz from Sklar Williams to review both the consent and agreement and this PPA. Both have signed off on it. We had some spirited negotiations through this process. And now we're bringing this to you guys for approval for both of those revisions, the consent and agreement and that revision on the PPA.
So this doesn't change anything that we were originally thinking, right? It's just, I mean, it does change things, but not for us.
So the rate is still the same. The term is still the same. The amount that we're purchasing is still the same. The one change that you will see if you read through the red line, we discussed with them their delayed delivery charges. It was originally set that they would pay us $3,000 a day if their project was delayed for the first 60 days. It would then go to $6,000 a day for the next 60 days and then move to $11,000. With some back and forth with them, they did agree to pay $6,750 every day that they are late for those 6 months. At the end of 6 months, if their project is not online, we have the ability to terminate the project. So that's the one financial change that you will see. Their delay charges have went up. If you calculate that over the length of time, we would be paid more. And then, of course, the verbiage is slightly different, that it allows for that delivery to be through either us or our energy manager. And the reason that we said or is because this is a 25-year contract, and we know that things will change in the next 25 years, and that we may either be beholden to the renewable portfolio standards, or there may be changes in the legislature that allows us to sell those RECs. So we want to make sure that we could take advantage of that if that change happens. But for now, it's of no financial consequence to us if Tenasca receives that.
What triggered that increase in from $3,000 to $6,000 for delays?
My gut feelings.
So they would, you were in a position to negotiate, and you're just like, hey.
Yes.
So our, you know, kind of our policy is we had a good agreement, and they came back and needed some things changed, and, you know, good negotiation is, okay, we'll do some things for you, you're going to do some things for us.
Good job.
Is with this potential increase in our load, is there any option to get more than 25 megawatts? Are they already contracted out?
They're fully subscribed in that area.
Okay. I know she didn't want to be recognized, but we have Ann here with us today, too. So
yes.
Appreciate her being here.
Hi. Nice to meet everybody that I don't already know.
All right. Any more questions or discussion? Do I hear a motion?
I move that we approve the revisions to the Escape Solar Purchase Power Agreement and Consent Agreement as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve revisions to Escape Solar LLC Purchase Power Agreement and Consent and Agreement as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Item L, review and possible approval of letter of agreement with Tenasca Power Services for possible action.
Melissa is going to handle this one as well.
Okay. So, as you know, we have been talking with you guys about the fact that we are being approached by many entities looking to come into our service territory. We've been approached by people who are wanting to put data centers in Mesquite, Moapa, and even in our area. One of the things that we were discussing with Tenasca is that they serve many industrial and data center loads throughout the nation, and so they have good relationships with some of these entities who are looking to expand into other service territories. So they approached us and said, if we bring to you a future load.
Tenasca did.
I'm sorry if I didn't say that. So they came to us and said, if we introduce this these new loads into your service territory and you sign a contract and you serve them, would you be willing to make an agreement with us that says we get to provide the power to them for a period of time? One of the things that they're looking for is we have a 3-year contract with them. If a entity came to us today and we signed a contract, by the time they actually started receiving power for us from us, it would likely be about 3 years. So Tenasca could go through all of that process. We could go get the new customer, and they never get to sell them an ounce of energy because we could at that time be with a new energy provider. So they've asked us, and again, I've worked with Byron on this agreement, and we've had a couple of revisions that we've sent back and forth with them, saying if they introduce load into our system and we sign an agreement with that customer that they've introduced to us, would we agree that they get to serve that load? And this agreement is for a 5-year period. So
5-year from when they bring or when they sign with you?
Well, it's 5-year. The agreement is for 5 years, so that it essentially ensures that they get 2 years.
Yeah, it's from the date that it's signed. So if they bring someone in at the end of 3 years, there's only 2 years left.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's
for 5 year period from the beginning of the signing of this contract.
But they're acting on behalf of both the customer and themselves, because it is customers that they're already serving load in another area. And so they're, in a sense, vouching for the customer. They're also, in a sense, vouching for us by introducing their customer into our service territory. They are in no way asking that we are guaranteed to sign a contract with any of those customers. They're just saying, if we introduce them to you and you agree to serve their load, that we have an agreement that we get to provide the power to them for a period of time.
What's the harm to us? Well, say you go back to Morgan Stanley in 3 years, is that going to cost conflict? What does that look like?
I think there really isn't, if I'm being honest. We know that they're going to provide the energy to anybody that we serve for the next 3 years. They have an all requirements contract with us, and or a load following contract with us. And it makes sense to me that they would want a certain level of protection. The other thing that I think is that if we went to an entity came to us and said, we want to sign a contract with you, and we said, okay, you're going to come online. Like, let's say they came at the beginning of 2025, and we believe that you're truly going to come online in 2028. We would say to them, we have no idea exactly what our contract is going to be, because our contract is only through 2028. This way, Tenasca gets to say, we would sign a contract with you for those additional 2 years for that specific load only. It's only for that load. So then they have a contracted rate for those 2 years, and then we would have to fold that into our next contract with whoever it is.
Does it come through us? Do we still...
Yes.
It?
Yes. I'm sorry?
So we'd have a wheeling fee, I assume?
It still comes through us. It's just that they're the guaranteed provider for that service.
Two power purchase contracts, one with Tenasca and one with somebody else for a couple of years.
Yes, only for that piece of that load. Yes.
So one thing you have to remember here too, Morgan Stanley had this in our existing contract, and Tenasca has this in our next contract, that if we bring in a load that's more than a megawatt and a half, that comes in under a special contract. It doesn't...
Like Crown Court. Right?
Exactly. So in a way, it's the way we've been doing business anyway, that we sign a special contract with this entity until they get folded into our regular schedule.
But it does ensure that they get to feed that special contract for at least that 5-year period. And we're saying 3 years, but somebody may miraculously make it through the county and get their business up in 2 years.
Now you're dreaming.
Hey, I'm just saying. I'm just saying all of the stars may align and Tenasca gets to serve them for 3 years, but they just want some reassurance that they get something from that investment.
Is Crown Court going to roll into our Tenasca power deal right here?
Yes.
A month or later?
Mm-hmm.
How does it work on the rate that we get to? Right now, we have our power rate and we have our service rate stacked together, essentially, how much we're paying for power and how much service. And if we serve them, we have a
special contract that is outside of that set rate tariff.
At a different power rate, but
correct.
We're still at our service rate, you might call it.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
But it is separate from the rates that we have right now. They do not become our general industrial customer. They have their own special contract because they're over 1.5 megawatts. That's required.
Mm-hmm. So just for the energy portion, mm-hmm. they'll be guaranteeing them a certain rate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions or comments?
Do we want this additional load? Do we want these data centers? Are we excited about this?
This is that's one of the things that they've really made very clear. This is under no obligation for us to sign a contract with anybody that they introduce to us. If it is not a good fit for them or for us, it's no harm, no foul. But if we do sign a contract, they have some payback there. So we're still going to vet and do everything on our side with studies to ensure that this is a good fit. It's just that Tenasca guarantees they get to serve that load for a certain number of years.
Melissa, you mentioned they've done it with other data centers. Are they implying that it's a good item? Would it be good for us?
I don't know that they're implying that. I think they're saying, we have customers that are looking to move into your service territory. Would you like us to introduce them to you?
I think what they're implying is a data center load is good for them.
Good customers. We control the margin on it.
Yes. Yes. We still set the rate. The only thing that we're doing is getting a contract on their behalf. And then we still build everything the same that we would with another customer.
Any more comments or questions? Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve a letter of agreement with Tenasca Power Services as presented and authorize the general manager, CEO, to execute the agreement?
I'll move that we do that. If you possible, approve a letter of recommendation or agreement with Tenasca Power to provide power service future.
And do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve a letter of agreement with Tenasca Power Services as presented and authorize the general manager, CEO, to execute the agreement. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Madam Chair, there is no public in the speech, just for your information.
There is no public?
No public.
Okay. Well, we got some right here, so we're good. Okay, item M, review and possible approval of the 2025 rate increase for possible action.
Before we jump into this, you know, this is the fifth board meeting this year that we've talked about this. And we have provided as more and more detail as it's become available to us. And we think we have, I don't think, we know we have all the information available to us now. But the presentation that Melissa gave at our last board meeting contained all that information. I've asked her just to repeat that and to go through that again so that we have a good understanding of what's going on, what the rate increase it could be, and we're still going to recommend a range for you to decide what works best for you. So with that little bit of lead-in, Melissa, I'll turn it to you to go through the presentation.
Perfect. So, rate discussion. Where are power costs going? Depending on the news source, the context, and the type of resource, the answer to that question varies. But overall, we can say at this time that power costs are increasing. Now, we know that people believe that there's going to be changes in our industry with the new administration, and I believe that there will be changes, but that doesn't guarantee if exactly when or what. So what we have to do is make a decision based on the contracts that we have now and the information that we have right now. So what drives power costs? Fuel costs, increase in the cost of fossil fuels, natural gas, coal, oil, have a direct impact on costs. One of the things that we have talked about many times as we went through this new contract with Tenasca and reviewing all of those negotiations was the fact that when Mendes was negotiating our contract with Morgan Stanley, natural gas was at a record low. We were not as lucky in 2023 and 2024 to be in that same market. Supply and demand. Growing demand for electricity, especially during peak seasons, can be triggered by both higher usage due to weather, economic expansion, and/or population growth. Infrastructure investment. Aging infrastructure requires significant investment to upgrade or replace, as well as additional infrastructure needs to meet capacity and reliability needs.
If I could jump in here too, you know, one of the things that's really become a big part of this is When we negotiated the Morgan Stanley contract in 2016, and I'll use the Reed Gardner coal plant, for example, it was in full operation. And now as we negotiated this contract, the Reed Gardner plant is gone, and many across the United States are gone. So there's a scarcity factor out there. As we've talked to the entities as we were negotiating this contract, firm resources are hard to come by, and all of the utilities are bidding for the remaining firm resources that are out there. And that's helped drive the prices up, too. And so that's been a really big concern. Is that scarcity factor, and that's a big part of this equation in addition to the gas prices. When we did the Morgan Stanley contract, it was just gas prices. Now you have to factor in those firm resources, and that's become a big component in this.
Infrastructure investment. Aging infrastructure requires significant investment to upgrade or replace, as well as additional infrastructure needs to meet capacity and reliability needs. Regulatory changes. New environmental regulations can increase operating costs. Renewable energy integration. Transitioning to renewable energy sources involves upfront costs for technology and infrastructure, as well as the redundancy of baseload power to fill these intermittent resources. Weather events. Extreme weather, such as hurricanes, heat waves, and droughts, can disrupt supply and increase demand, leading to higher rates. And market dynamics, changes in the market structure as well as supply chains. One of the market changes that we are currently facing that we've discussed with you guys on multiple occasions is the implementation of MV Energy joining the EDAM, or the day ahead market. We don't know the full extent of what those implications are going to mean to us, but all signs right now show it's going to mean an increase. So what is driving the cost, the change in our cost? Morgan Stanley Commodity Group has provided firm load following power resource, firm transmission service, load forecasting, coordination with the Western Area Power Administration for hydropower resources, and scheduling delivery of power resources from across the Western grid since June of 2016. Negotiations for a renewal of that contract showed the current market rates trending between $109 and $113 per megawatt. The current contract rate is at $44 per megawatt, just over $44 per megawatt. As we continued negotiations and we saw other suppliers, the Board of Trustees ultimately signed a contract with Tenaska Power Services for just under $88 per megawatt to begin in January of 2025. This contract will provide all current contract provisions as well as scheduling the new solar resource coming online in July of 2025.
And I want to emphasize to you guys that if we were staying on this existing contract that we have now, we wouldn't be having this discussion at all. We could have continued to operate on this for years. So this rate increase has nothing to do with the reliability projects that we're doing, staffing, equipment, anything. We could have continued to do business as usual with that. This is being 100% driven by the change in our cost of power that we have to buy.
So how much does this affect our bottom line? The market portion of our portfolio is anticipated to increase $16.2 million in 2025. OPD's total power cost is anticipated to be $38.6 million. And the addition of the 25 megawatts of solar isn't beginning until July of 2025. We've calculated that the cost from January to June without that cheaper resource is about $2.1 million.
Asking one question, you probably told me before, but the $88 that we're paying starting January, is that going to go down when we start bringing the solar in, or does that include the solar portion? So if you blended that, would it be less?
Yes, if you blend it. When it comes on, it will be blended with both our hydro, our solar, and then our market. But for those first few months, all of that will be bought at market cost.
$80.
Yes.
In essence, what we're doing when the solar comes online is we're buying less market power. Mm-hmm. So it's not changing the price of anything. It's just that we're buying less of the expensive power.
What will that blended price look like? We're using the 25 megawatts.
Oh, that varies from month to month dramatically.
It varies both on the weather and the season.
Because of how much we have to buy.
And then also because our hydro varies. That's based on hydrology as well.
Does it be like $10, $20, any? Like what's our range?
$8.
You
don't
know.
No
idea.
You don't know until you know the weather.
No, no.
If we had last summer.
Between.
I have
right now we're five. Several major questions about that particular slide.
Okay.
Power costs. Right now we're paying about $20 for power.
Yeah, about 21.
It's going to double, isn't it?
That's it.
Mindless. The little reduction we get from the 25 solar, right, which is only during the daytime and all that sort of stuff. And it seems to me that if you show only 4 million increased cost, how can that be? If
no, sir. I show $16.2 million increase. From that $16 million, we have additional revenue from increased sales because our sales have grown so much.
At five,
we have additional $4 million. Then OPD is proposing that we take a $5.1 million margin reduction.
Okay, that's the other question. It's showing here on this that the margin is $8 million right here for 24. And so, but over here, only shows 5.5.
Because
that's not 5 million. That's only 3 million, isn't it?
We anticipate our margin for 2024 to be about just under 12 million.
So we exceeded the margin from 2024 because we had such a hot summer.
Yeah, but so we can't guarantee that.
No, you can't guarantee it.
No.
It seems to me if our revenue, if our cost was by 20 million, actually the power that we're buying, we're purchasing it, right, for 44, if we're paying 40 and we're going to pay 8, that's 40. Right, that's a 40 increase.
Well, you're not taking into account the solar. So what we see is that we're going to have a $16.2 million increase in our power cost.
Okay. Go from 21 to 21 right. Plus 16.
And then, now our sales is not going up $4 million a year.
No, but we saw such a large growth in sales in 2024 that there is still additional revenue that comes from that. Yes, we have to buy more power, but we're also selling more power.
Yeah,
so you have increased sales, then we're reducing our margins, tells us we still need to make up $7 million in revenue. That $7 million is what we're proposing we need to make up in a rate increase.
Boy, cost go up that much, and only $7 million. Okay.
So in our UCFC's revenue requirement study, when they did the study and the rate design, they recommended that because this is a power cost increase, that the power cost be, the rate increase be spread evenly across every single tier of every single rate class. So we are proposing a rate increase of 0.0165 cents to 0.0173 cents.
Actually,
I'm sorry, that was supposed to be 7.4. That's my old slide.
$0.0165.
Okay, yes. So how do the revenue requirements differ from the NRU CFC presentation? Revenue requirement study was based on actual sales of 2022 with some estimates for the remainder of 2023. Those estimates based on continued contract negotiations, if you remember, they presented to you in March. We actually end up signing the Tenasca agreement in April. So just after that presentation was made, the board approved the new contract, and we went back to them with the actual cost. But when we went through and did our budget for now and said, based on our sales that we have had, this is what we anticipate, this is the growth we've had, they came back and said that is directly related to the growth in KWH sales in 2024 and in 2025. Now, if you remember in September, Mendes reported to you guys that in 2024, we exceeded our all-time sales growth for the day, the peak system sales, six times. We had, in the prior year, our peak that we had was 116 megawatts. In 2024, our peak was 124.7 megawatts.
Yeah, that's peak day. What about for the entire year, though, the total sales?
So if you look at the year, our previous record for yearly sales was 416 million.
Okay.
And that was back in 2007. In the last few years, we've hovered right around 400,000. This year, we're going to be somewhere between 450 to 460,000.
So 5 million more, right?
Yeah, 50 million more in sales this year.
That's an 8.9% increase in our KWH from 23 to 24. KWH sold.
It was a hot summer.
And it was long. If you guys remember, we were over 100 degrees the first week of October.
And October 13th.
Yeah. But who's counting?
That raises the question, though, because it was very hot summer. Should we take a risk on that much money coming in for an average summer or even a low sales summer? Because we're basing it on projection based on bigger, better, you know, sort of thing. Yet sales may be down in the summer because the summer weather may change. It's kind of a risk, isn't it?
This is not 100% accurate, but we look at the Bureau of Reclamation and some of the others that give forecasts on energy use, and they say with a La Nina year that we're in, that our area is probably due for more drought and more excessive temperatures. And that will hold true till it doesn't. I mean, there's no guarantee on that, but that's the forecast.
And Mike, this isn't a one time that we never can raise rates again if we find that we have a wonderful, wet, and cool year this year, and we're not meeting our financial needs, you guys can come right back next year and raise rates.
I think
again.
That's what I'm
hopefully
getting
we don't have to do that.
We may have, I mean, this is a bet on hot summer. Maybe that's not the right bet, you know what I mean? Because we should not be a betting agency.
I think it's more of a protection of our customers than anything.
Than now to raise rates.
Yeah, it should be time.
People are expecting everything to go up. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing to take into consideration, Mike. Let's hear the thing and then consider that. Like, do we want to err on the high side because of what you said?
Well, I'm not even saying on the high side. I'm saying more of a medium. This seems to be betting on the fact we're going to sell a lot more power next year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so maybe
we
need to raise,
maybe
so we need to raise rates more.
And I know, right? Well, you used to say, you know, you're sort of level things out when you give us projections for next year's sale. And that's all I'm suggesting. Is that, you know, this may be, but I like the idea that we could come back in 6 months and raise power. Great if we had to.
Well, that's one reason we Lisa is presenting a range, because this needs to be, this shouldn't be a me decision or a me Lisa decision. This needs to be a decision by all of us on what's
on the range. Between the two items on the range, do you have a slide on that?
I do.
Go ahead. Thank you.
So if we did an increase of 0.0163 cents, that would increase revenue by $6.6 million approximately.
Income.
Mm-hmm. 0.0174 would be $7,090,000, so just over $7 million. If we did it at the $7 million, that would allow us to maintain our anticipated margin of $5.5 million. So you have just under $500,000 leeway there. You're going from a $5 million margin to a $5.5 million margin in that range.
And that was the number
based
on
those sales.
On the previous slide.
Yes. Yeah.
Taking the highs.
Yes. I'm going the wrong way. I'm sorry. So what does that impact look like? Price increases can be challenging for our customers because they often strain their budgets and they disrupt financial planning. Many of our customers have fixed or limited incomes, so even small increases create an impact. What have we done to help mitigate these costs to our customers? We've continued to be diligent in keeping our operating costs low. You guys know that every year we present to you guys our key racial trend analysis that's calculated by NRU CFC. And one of the ratios that they give is controllable expenses. That excludes depreciation and power cost. The controllable expenses reported on the KRTA for last year for the state of Nevada, the median was $1,173 per consumer that the seven respondents from our state, that was their median cost. The median for utilities that are based on our size was $608. Overton Power's controllable expenses last year were $468 per consumer. We take monitoring our expenses and running our system efficiently very seriously. We signed a 25 megawatt solar contract at a much lower than market rate. This offsets the energy that would have been purchased on the market for those hours each month. We continue to advocate on behalf of hydropower, ensuring we continue to get the low-cost, fully renewable resource to add to our portfolio mix. And we are suggesting that we reduce margins annually to pay for a portion of the cost increase to ensure our customers do not have the entire increase passed on to them. Oops. So we have been sequestered in this wonderful contract for the last 8 years, and with no increase to our customers since 2012. As a board, we have made the decision, or you have made the decision, that we were not going to pass rate increases onto our customers until we had to. We have been locked into this contract, even though the market was changing around us. Our contract was what it was, and so we left our rates what they were. Now our contract has changed. We're in a different market, and we as staff are proposing that you as a board need to approve a rate increase to our customers. No one wants a rate increase. Every person in this room is going to feel that rate increase. We don't want to pay more for gas, hamburger at the grocery store, or on our power bill. None of us want that. But we have to be a financially viable company so that we can continue to provide power to our customers every day. And part of that means that we have to raise the rates.
When was the last time OPG raised its rates? 2012. 8 years.
We actually did a rate reduction.
We did a rate. It ended up being a reduction for most residential customers in 19. And we added some money to our base charge and reduced the energy cost, which, like I said, for most residential customers, penciled out to be a reduction.
I ran through the numbers, and the higher one adds for a 2,000 kilowatt hour per month. If we go to the 0.0174 over the 0.0165, it adds $1.80 to a residential power bill.
$1.80?
No.
That's above the first one to the second one. The increase is going to be $32.60 to use the lower one, $34.40. If we use the higher rate.
So the KRTA showed in 2023, that the average residential customer used 1,163 kWh a month. The increase to that customer will be $20.28 a month at the 0.0174. And you're right. It's about a dollar, just over a dollar difference, swing from the 63 to the 74.
And just for reference, if you add 1.75 cents onto our existing rates, our average for that person that uses 1,163 kilowatt hours per month, their average is 9.61 cents per kilowatt hour for the month. If you look at Nevada as a whole, the average price per kilowatt hour for power is 13.73 cents. We're 30% below that. And in southern Nevada, the average is actually higher. It's about 14.5 cents for the average power rate per kilowatt hour in Nevada. So as painful as it is to change rates and raise rates, we're still far below the averages for Southern Nevada, for the state, and on the national scale as well. 30 to 40% below.
And that's really good. It's when our costs double on something.
Yeah.
You know.
How likely is it that, well, you'd have to determine the weather, I guess.
You always want me to have a crystal ball and tell you how much we're going to sell. I have to be realistic in my sales. And what I did was I went back and looked at, okay, what has our sales growth been for the last 3 years? And you're right. We might not have as hot of a year next year, but we might. And so I have to be as conservative as I possibly can to say, what do I feel is the best for, what's the best decision that I can make right now? And the best decision I feel like I can make right now is between 0.0163 and 0.0174. That's the range that I feel is the best decision now. I would like for us to avoid having to come back to you for a rate rewrite in a year.
Or in 6 months or 7 months. And, of course, a lot depends on the budget you submit next month.
I really like what Dale said, or it resonates with me, I should probably say. There's not going to be a better time to raise rates than right now.
Yeah.
Because we're having them. But if we do it wrong, we have to do it again. That's going to be, it would feel more painful to me. But since your crystal ball,
it's like we should do with 0.0174.
Yeah.
Well, I think we just have a hard time because we haven't done it in 12 years. I mean, you look at the local utilities, the water, the telephone, every year they're doing a rate increase. Yeah. And I think we stay with what staff has recommended that, and we reevaluate in another year, and we see where we're at.
At the high end or the low end?
I would do I recommend the 0.0174.
I agree with that.
And that gives us for me, when I figured it out, I used much more than the 1100. I did a 2000 kilowatt hour. And that would add about $22 extra if we go to the 0.0174 or the 0.165. It adds $22 over the year to my power.
Anybody have more comments or questions?
If only comment might be that when we had discussions before, I see on this you left the base surcharge charge, and I really recommended that if we add staff, that would be big, especially if it's not lineman staff, any office staff, is overhead, and that ought to be perhaps adjusted. If in case we're going to talk about more staffing, and we could even round it up to the next dollar we pay for one person, it just seems insignificant. Anyway, but I agree, Rich. I think it would be silly to go to the smaller one because we'd be on the riskier side, even riskier than $7.75.
Did we talked about base rate in court in conjunction with raising the rate before, didn't we?
Yeah, CFC talked about that.
Can you remind us what that was about?
Go ahead. You tell them their suggestion. I'm butting in on your conversation.
You're supposed to. You're the boss.
Okay. Well, okay. I'll keep going then. So when CFC gave their presentation, they recommended that we change the kilowatt hour charge because of the new contract. They said leave the base charge and everything else out of it for now. Keep it as simple as possible. Make it simple for people to understand. If you need to change the base charge, do it later.
Because the cost that is increasing to us is power. And the cost then that increase is put on to the people who are using the power. The demand on our system is not changing, and the costs, I agree with you, costs are going up, but the base charge, we're, as Minda said, we're still operating under those same rates, and we're doing okay. The thing that is changing is the cost of our power, and therefore we're saying our customers' cost of power has to change.
And if that's what we're using as the basis for this whole discussion, all we're doing is passing the cost on.
A portion of the cost increase.
Right, that we have to.
But we aren't passing the cost on.
A portion.
We're eating a lot of it.
Yes.
And doing
we're adjusting.
We're trying to grow. Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, well, that's all right to do for that. But I mean, you've got to be a little cautious too, because when our margin is paying for a lot of stuff here, and if that margin shrinks, you can't have the stuff.
That's the thing. That's been helping fund our reliability projects and our maintenance and things like that we need to do. And
yeah. I have two questions, I guess. One, you talk about we've used more power this year than we ever have, and so that gives us the hope to lower how much we're raising it. We are also about to take on a lot more load. Some of it's pretty certain, right? And so that's going to help us a lot, keeping the rate lower, because we're going to sell so much more power, so our revenue is just going to be higher. And so...
But the new load that we are potentially bringing on, these significant loads, they would be on a different contract at a different rate. And so they wouldn't be...
Lose money on it. We drive that rate.
Right? The margin is going to be built into that rate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to increase our margin.
But it's going to take years for these projects to come to connection.
That's my
question. 3 to 5 years,
Say the ones that are already kind of crossed the hurdles.
Even the cross-turtle ones will be
3 years.
Yeah, two to three years. Yeah.
2 to 3 years. Yeah. Outside this contract.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question is, how do you feel after you look at it as a ton more between the two, the high and the low number you're providing?
0.0174.
She was ready for that one.
Why?
Because I think that when you spread that cost over the... customers, for our residential customers, it is not, it's a much smaller significance. Now, to our commercial customers, it costs more. It does. The more power you use, the more expensive it is. I try to be as conservative as I possibly can, and what I hope is that I don't have to come back to you guys for any kind of a rate adjustment. I feel like we came up with 0.0174 because that was the number that we were comfortable with, but we wanted to give you a range that said if you guys want to be more conservative on the increase, we'll allow it. But don't go below 0.0163.
So my feeling is what's more unpopular than a rate increase is two rate increases. I have suggested the 1.74 cents because that works out with the numbers that CFC's given. There are still a lot of variables in there. All of you guys are right. There is no exact science here. So I'm hoping that the 1.74 works out as anticipated and that we don't have to do any rate adjustment in the next year or so.
That's why I was thinking it would be a better choice, is then you'll have to come back and revisit.
The higher rate increase gives us a little more certainty of that, though, doesn't it? Because we've got a little more margin.
Is it $500,000?
$490,000.
Well, and we're still in a situation where, you know, you looked at that list of projects. We have $30 million of projects to do, and that doesn't even include the maintenance things that we're doing, changing out, you know, 150 distribution poles per year, changing out 50 transmission poles per year, fixing things that get hit in storms, like by lightning and wind and so on. There's just a lot of variables out there, and we need to be able to keep the lights on.
For the season I've been here, it's felt very healthy, right? Financially, been pretty comfortable adding staff a little bit, just doing projects. With this rate increase, with this, are you feeling the pressure to become more lean, or can you maintain, or what do you feel?
I think, of course, there's pressure. But we're cutting our margins in half. We're going to now, ensure that we are going to have to borrow for more of our reliability. But we're doing this to be as absolutely fair to our customers as we can, because we also are customers, our family is customers, our neighbors are customers, and we want to be as fair as we possibly can. Would I love for us to have higher mark? I would, of course. That makes my life easier. But this is a number that I feel like we can live within those means of about a $5.5 million margin. We still can do $4.5 million worth of capital improvements every year, which is our standard cost. We're probably going to have to do some borrowing for the reliability portion of it, but that still gives us $1 million for maintenance and other expenses. So, yes, it's going to be leaner, absolutely. But
you know, you saw those ratio numbers that we are the lowest in state on our controllable costs. Just because we have a rate increase isn't going to change that philosophy. We're going to continue to watch our costs in every aspect. We're going to be careful of those things. It's not going to give us an open checkbook mentality. We will continue to operate the same way we have been, to be as efficient and as lean as possible, but also with the idea that if we get these new loads coming on, we're going to have to grow. We're going to have to grow and adjust. But the things that we can control will be as lean as we possibly can.
Our financial ratio is good. A lot of room.
Mm-hmm.
We keep getting, if we produce sell the same amount of power next year as this year, how much will our margins change with the 0.174?
It would give us. I can't answer if we sold exactly the same, because we always bake in some growth. But what we've anticipated is we would have $5.5 million margin.
But we also know that we'll pay a bandwidth charge every month, too, if we continue to do this.
Any more discussion or questions?
From what I've heard, quite a few, maybe I'm not hearing everybody right, but I feel like we're more concerned that we're not raising rates enough. We're going from a $12 million margin down to a $5 million margin?
Five and a half.
And, okay, this was a bumper year, but if we don't have a bumper year next year, we won't have any margin, right?
Well, I don't know that we won't have any, but it would be far less, yes.
Anyway, I'm concerned that that's not enough.
Yeah.
But...
Well, and I just want to remind you that I did not come up with this number up on my own. This was not just me on an island. We employed industry experts who do cost of service studies all year long for a living. That's what they do. They gave us these suggestions. And so I worked with them closely, and I just was on the phone with them 2 weeks ago rerunning numbers. So... this is their recommendation as well. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you, and it's hard. But Mendes and I have had a lot of talks about this, because I wanted to suggest a lower rate increase because it hurts my heart to raise people's rates. But reality is, this is the number I feel like we need to have to be financially viable and stable. And again, I'm trying to make it so that we do not have to come back for a rate review soon. Because I agree with Mendes. The last thing I want in my first year as the new CEO is to come back and say, I'd like more money. So I want us to...
You know, we haven't had a rate increase for 12 years. And over the last 12 years, inflation has went up 30-something percent.
This is a relatively small rate increase.
If we did a 30% rate increase... It would be a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think this is conservative, but we've done our homework. I would lean towards your 7-4 number as well. I think it's responsible. I I think it's reasonably, I support it.
Was that a motion?
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm thinking the motion then is to approve a rate increase of 0.0174 kilowatt hour.
Dollars per kilowatt hour.
Dollars per, well, 4 months. Okay, effective the proposed motion has been approved, no, has been made. All in favor?
I think Dale had something.
Okay.
I was just going to ask, what is the plan for debt reduction? If we're lowering it down to where we potentially have no margin, how do we pay off our debt?
We still have baked into our margins enough to make our debt service coverage, make our debt service covenants. I couldn't get that word out. We will still meet all of those covenants if we have a margin of 5.5 million.
Okay. So, and if we don't, principal and interest
rates, right?
Correct.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions? Okay, we have a motion on the table, and it's been seconded to approve a rate increase of $0.0174 per kilowatt hour, effective January 1st, 2025, as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That was painful. Any public comment?
Yeah, I don't know if protocol is here. Yeah, I'm just a resident.
Can you identify yourself?
Yeah, sure. Brian Schwartz, I live with Mesquite. I had a little trouble getting information about these rate increases. Your WhatsApp and things like that were delivered late to the consumers, and I had a discussion with the customer service representative about that. And so the fact that this was presented for five meetings was kind of lost on me. Okay, I think some of that has been solved, but it seems kind of late in the game here, right? You know, things are coming at the end of the year. It's like, oh, it's November, right? Worked in business a lot of years. You don't wait until the last month to decide rate increases and things like that. So a little more public knowledge about these things, a little more upfront, I think would be appreciated by the residents. I understand the cost, and I appreciate the we're going to deliver it through the rates or through your usage. You know, I'm not a fan of base increases just because, I mean, there are some base costs of things. I also understand the things you guys are talking about in terms of everything's going up, so why don't we go up higher? I'm not a fan of that, right? Because everybody's budgets are already stretched, and, you know, squeezing everybody at the same time just isn't a good thing. This was a very informative meeting for me. It does look like I could have stayed up in Mesquite and watched it. I am kind of, and I didn't know about that either. I still can't find the explanation for the outage. I can't find that on the website. So I just think there's some more transparency with the customers. You guys talk a lot about in these things about numbers. Percentages make a lot of sense to a lot of people, right? In terms of you're going through all this stuff. What's it, at the end of the day, kind of that example number that was given about $20.28 for the 1100, I think that would be a good way to communicate it to people. I also think it may have been a little short-sighted to go 12 years without a rate increase and maybe have a little more runway to kind of buffer the blow. I understand that's a very long time. I lived in PA before I moved out here 3.5 years ago, and I don't think I ever went 12 years without a rate increase. I would kind of expect more on a 5-year cycle or something like that. We do a bump to try to keep things, more evenly distributed, right? And maybe lessen the blow for things that are driven by demand and things of that nature. But I do appreciate all the efforts that people have put into this discussion, this process and things like that. And even just getting the cost down from the market, I do appreciate that too. It's not clear to me what impact the solar will have as far as the rate goes, that's still, even with all the numbers and things that were presented, I didn't see a number. Well, you said it was 44 per megawatt hour. Or no, that was correct. Never mind. So I'm not sure what impact that will have on me as a consumer. But I would actually like to see more of that, since it does decrease our transmission costs because it's right next door, right? One of the things that when I first moved here, we had a couple outages within the very first month that I was here, and I'm like, you know, what's up with that kind of thing? And I wasn't real happy with OPD5, to be honest with you. I'm a little bit happier. The 29th outage, I still work, right? And so outage like the one on the 29th of October really impact me at home because I can't work, okay? I'm a remote tech employee. And so I was extremely disappointed at those other ones. I was less disappointed. I missed the meeting that I wasn't really thrilled to be in anyways. But there are still people that are working at home and things like that. And reliability to us is critical because, you know, I have UPSs in my house, but don't do me a darn bit of good if my internet provider is out, okay? I mean, I saw the 100% uptime on servers. Like, you guys keeping your lights on, you know, I'd like to, you know, my kind of back of the envelope calculation, we're at 2.9s. And being in the tech industry, we like to shoot for 4 or 5. So, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for making
Could I ask you a question?
Sure, absolutely.
You know, we've put stuff in the paper, we've advertised our board meetings, we've had stuff on social media. What's the best way for you to find out what's going on here?
Well, I saw the WhatsApp published on Facebook just recently. I'd never seen it on there before. And I saw that you guys have it in the post office. I don't go in the post office, staying there looking at the board. I don't read the newspaper either. Frankly, relied on the newsletter coming in the bill because I actually find those very informative. And the customer service person that I spoke to said you guys were kind of not going to do that anymore. And I actually was very disappointed. You know, the issue was there wasn't one in August, she said, or something like that. And it really screwed up in the billing cycle, so I didn't get mine. I got the notification of the October meeting after the October meeting. So, you know, that I think is a good way because you send everybody bills, right? I mean, I don't think there's an option for me to go electronic on that. If there was an email or something like that. I actually prefer to, you know, I got a text message that said there was an outage. If I got a text message that says, hey, there's a new newsletter for you or something like that, or a board meeting coming up or something like that, I think that'd be just fine too.
We can do that. One of the most controversial things we do is the newsletter. Some people say they don't send it to me,
yeah.
And other people say they count on it. So that's why I'm asking. What's the best way?
I had that conversation with the customer service representative too. My mother's an old person, I'm an old guy, so she's even older. And yeah, she likes to get things via the mail. I'm happy with things electronic as well. And the discussion we had was the cost of printing, the cost of shipping it, you know, to people and all that kind of good stuff. And so, you know, if it meant, you know, it was 0.073 instead of 0.074, I'm like, yeah, discontinue the newsletter and stop sending it to people. But, you know, I don't know how that factors into the bottom line. But, yeah, I think whatever mechanism people are signed up for communication of outages, I think that would be a fine way to communicate issues that are important to the customer.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you for attending. It's not often that we have the public. I mean,
it's
always, no matter what your comments are,
sure,
they're educational to us and it lets us know how the public feels. So thank you for coming down here to attend. And
it was nice being here in person to see, you know, I don't know how much of this information is available, like specifically the outage information, if that's available online or things like that, because I'm a data guy. I run through a lot of numbers. And back the envelope, the nines, and I would like to see more of that kind of information available for the public. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay. Any trustees have comments?
I do have one about the gentleman's comment about the base service charge. Let's see if I can catch him here just a moment. On your comment about you didn't like the base service charge.
No, I didn't like increasing it.
Okay, here's the deal, though. A large number of our population is not here year-round.
Sure.
Yet our costs go on, and if they walk in the door in July and flip the switch, they expect power. It costs us something. So the other people are paying, you should pay for your base charge, which is the cost of the person going out there and maintaining everything,
sure,
even though you're not here.
Right.
And if you didn't have a base charge, you're
well, and absolutely, I agree with you 100%, right? All I'm saying is that this rate increase was driven by costs of energy, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so base charge should absolutely cover everybody that's here, whether they're here 1 month of the year or whether they're here 12 months of the year, they're paying their base charge bill. That should cover all the maintenance required to deliver service maintenance.
Any other trustee comments?
I just want to thank the board and staff for allowing us to go for 12 years without a rate increase. We got lucky and got our power purchase contract was great.
We made a smart decision.
It's not lucky. Yeah, it was good management.
It was a smart decision.
Well, and got a great power purchase contract. And then, you know, you showed us graphs. We've maintained the ability to provide power inexpensively, quite a bit less expensively than all of our neighbors. And I thank you, staff.
Thank you.
And like, I feel like if I have any feather in my cap for being on this board, it's we went 12 years without raising rates. And to me, that's like amazing and a big deal.
What is the percent increase?
It depends on your
residential.
17.
Gonna make me wear my readers in front of everybody to show how old I am, Chad. 21.3.
Thank you. And at the same time that we didn't have to raise rate, we've extended service largely. I mean, we've had over the last 12 years, it's really kind of boomed out here, not all over the area. So. At the same time that we weren't raising rates, we were extending and growing. So I think you're all to commend them for doing that because, yes, you report to us, but you all do the labor. I, for one, really appreciate that. Any other trustee comments? Okay. Item P, approval of the next board meeting. Please note, it's Tuesday, December 10th. At 3 p.m. in the Mesquite boardroom. That's not our usual day, so make sure you.
We have to move that, right?
Yeah.
Make a motion we move that to Tuesday.
Yeah, the next
December 10th. December 10th.
Okay. I'll second that. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Sorry. Aye. Okay. Executive session.
Can we have a 2-minute break, please, Judy?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Jack.
We'll take a 5-minute break. Where's the heater? Okay.